T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Third down and 8. 2:19 to go in the game. Receivers left and right. Slot to the right side. Jimmy Graham standing up right side of the line. Rodgers in the shotgun. Takes the snap. Rushes on. Lofts it over the right side. Devontae over the shoulder. Catch. Got out of bounds. Cross the 50. First down, Green Bay, the 46-yard line of Seattle. That was huge. A beautiful throw. Over-the-shoulder catch, Devontae Adams. And the throw came in right over the helmet of Ugo Amadi. 32 yards. The Packers go 8-1 here at Lambeau Field in the regular and postseason. And a hard-fought 28-23 victory over Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
That's how it sounded Sunday night on Packers Radio. The former voice of the Bears, for my money, the best who's ever done it for the Bears, and they've had some good ones. Wayne Larrabee, Hub Arkish's former partner, and Hub was in Green Bay for the Packers 28-23 win over the Seahawks. Are you okay? Did you hurt yourself there?
I'm good.
Okay. All right. You look like you hurt your thumb or something like that.
I don't know if you've ever had to. My daughter hates me because I pass this on to her. My fingers in the winter crack.
Uh-huh.
All of them, you know, right by the nail. And that's what all these Band-Aids and lotion and crap are.
I didn't notice until a second ago. Yeah, you are Band-Aided up.
I'm fine.
I thought you had an injury.
I'm playing with it.
Slaving away, you know, over a hot phone bank there on this afternoon. But terrific game for the Packers Sunday night. And staving off Russell Wilson, doing Russell Wilson-type things. And Hub was on the sideline for it. You saw all of the games over the weekend. So whatever is on your mind, if you're a football fan, listeners, you are welcome to jump in and do it right now. Real fast, a little bit of closure on the last segment we had. There are some people who are suggesting other reasons why the Bears of the mid-80s, above and beyond Jim McMahon, were not more successful, didn't win more championships. And your thoughts, Hub, on whether Jim Finks was the last really competent football man to front the Bears from a personnel standpoint. Is that a fair statement? Because there are several texters who are commenting something to that effect, that they've lost their professional competence to the same degree Jim operated at.
Well, Jim's a Hall of Famer, you know, and so the comparisons are unfair. He's one of the great GMs and evaluators of all time. But that said, people forget that he left before 84. And while he did build that team, Bill Tobin did an outstanding job of maintaining it up until the early 90s. You know, you look at all those picks after 84, you still got some pretty good football players in Neil Anderson and Jim Harbaugh and Wendell Davis and Trace Armstrong. And, you know, we can go on and on. And they were, you know, so Bill Tobin was very, very good. The first half of the Jerry Angelo regime was very impressive. You know, he comes in June of 01. So that team is already built. He wastes 2 years dismantling it instead of trying to add to it. But then once he had it dismantled, they go from worst to first in 05. They go to the Super Bowl in 06, had some struggles, again, the quarterback position, but they get back to a title game in 10. So you got to give Jerry Angelo some credit for being, more than competent.
Yeah.
Are Angelo and Tobin in the Jim Finks class? No, they're not. But very few are.
What distinguished Jim from those guys is he was willing, well, not just willing, but he succeeded with high draft picks at positions that weren't sexy. He drafted offensive linemen in the first round who wound up being, if not Hall of Fame talent, certainly very close to it. Guys like Covert, guys like Van Horn.
I ended up in this business by accident. I was 25 years old. My dad passed away. It was his dream. I took over the family business. And the two people who reached out to me at that time, because they were friendly with my dad, were Al Davis and Jim Finks. And so whatever little I may know about football, most of it in those formative years, which was the next 10, 15 years, came from Al Davis and Jim Finks. And they were in, and this is at one of the you know the greatest eras of the game with Bill Walsh and you know some of the other guys who were dominating at the end of the 70s, the 80s, the early 90s. Jimmy Johnson comes along. You got Joe Gibbs there. Very few were as knowledgeable and successful as Jim was. And you know, it's legend now that everybody knows that his philosophy was that you build from the trenches out. You build your offensive and defensive line. You look at all the high picks he used on the offensive and defensive line. But it wasn't just that. He had a second part to his theory that I've always believed, which I think is part of what's gotten Ryan Pace in a little bit of trouble. It was actually after Jim left, but Bill Tobin was very much a Jim disciple. He was here when Jim got here, but you know, was his left right-hand man for a number of years. And I asked Bill, it was in the mid to late 80s, you know, how are you guys constantly hit on these first-round picks? How are you so successful? And he said, our philosophy is real simple. We want guys who have been really good football players already at top college programs and who have won. That's what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. It worked for them. It probably still works today. And so I think a lot of these new age guys who are more interested in athletic measurements and traits and vertical leap and all that.
New age guys.
Stuff's all nice, you know, but if they haven't been able to be good at football in their college careers with all those traits, why are they going to be good in the NFL?
I love the description, new age guys. That's funny.
Listen, I am not quitting on Mitch Trubisky yet. I'm very concerned. I think the odds are long.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the question that Ryan needed to ask himself was, why did he sit on the bench for 2 years behind Marquise Williams, who clearly is not an NFL quarterback? And the story is that the coach was telling him that it wasn't a talent decision, it was a chemistry decision. That's a lot of crap. I mean, the other guy beat him out for 2 years, and why was that? And so it's not to say that with his great traits he won't become a very good quarterback, but it clearly is the reason that he's so far behind Mahomes and Watson right now.
Let's go to the phones. Jim is in Love's Park and is first up on The Score with McNeil and Arkush. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Hub. Question, Derrick Henry, obviously one of the best backs in the league this year. Chiefs have struggled against the run most of this season, although late in the year, last five, six games of the year, I do think they showed a lot of improvement in that category. I think that Kansas City's probably just going to just absolutely sell out to stop him. At least that's what I would do. I think that if you get a couple stuffs on first and second down, Ryan Tannehill just and Corey Davis or any other receiver on that team, it's probably not going to be able to move the ball. Kansas City does have a pretty good pass defense. I think most metrics would play that out. Paul, the question for you is, what should Kansas City's defensive game plan be on Sunday?
Well, listen, Derrick Henry has just done something that's never been done before in the history of the game, over 180 yards in three consecutive games. You can sell out to stop him all you want. You may not be able to. I think the key for the Chiefs, there's two different game plans. One is if Chris Jones goes, and one is if Chris Jones doesn't. If Chris Jones is on the interior of that line, then there's a lot more you can do with the athletes behind him because he's a true two-gap player who can force the Titans to change some things up. If Jones can't go, I wouldn't even focus so much on Henry. I would take away everything else. I would realize that as dominant as health as Henry is, it's only translated to 13 and, 20 points or 23 points?
Right.
And the Chiefs are going to score 40 or 50. So just make sure that they don't get anything else working on offense and force them to go up and down the field with Henry and make sure that you're scoring. It's the Titans' defense that I think you worry about more.
Chris Jones is a 25-year-old monster, number 95. He is a disruptive interior defensive lineman. If he's not there, Derrick Henry has another huge game. I don't know how you stop him without your best interior defensive tackle.
Well, and Jones is the really rare player who can be a two-gap player, but he's also an outstanding interior pass rusher. It's one of the things that makes Akeem Hicks special, and that's probably one of your comps. You look around the league for other guys like Akeem Hicks. Chris Jones is one of them, and you just go back and track the games he's missed and the games he's played. Kansas City is a different defense when he's on the field.
Let's try Mike. He's next in Rockford. Mike in Rockford on The Score. Who knew? Hi, bud.
Hi, guys. How are you?
All right.
As you know, I despise the Packers. So talk me off the ledge here. I have this horrible feeling in my gut. They've had so much luck go their way. I'm not saying they're 13-3 and they're not a good team. They're a solid football team. But you got to have luck sometimes. The ball bounced their way figuratively. and literally. I mean, it's they've had some calls going against the Lions. They shouldn't have won that game. They faced the Vikings once without, you know, without their running, without Cook. They faced the Chiefs, you know, without their quarterback. So they've had some stuff bounced their way. Hub, if the Packers can somehow stop the 49ers run game, is that going to force Garoppolo into having, obviously, the pass? And that scares me because he does been known to turn over the ball. And, I mean, what do you think the 49er defense could do to stifle Jones and then Adams? And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mike.
Mike, real quick, I just want to – there's a texter here on the last conversation. Hub, if Tennessee controls the clock, there is no 40 points. Texter, you didn't watch the game Sunday. The Chiefs scored 21 points in 3 minutes. Okay, so no, it isn't about Tennessee controlling the clock. Getting to this game and Mike's point, you know, Mike, I don't think the Packers are a typical 14-3 football team. I mean, you know, I look at the talent, I look at how they play, and they don't scare me the way most 14-3 teams would. Okay, that said. They caught a break, you know, Sunday night. Seattle comes in with no Chris Carson and no Rashad Penny. But that's the way the game goes, you know. And I actually was more impressed than unimpressed by the Packers Sunday night. They clearly had what I thought was their best offensive game of the year, where they actually Seattle did a fairly nice job. Aaron Jones had two touchdowns, but he only rushed for 66 yards on 21 carries. So they did slow that down a little bit. And yet Rodgers was able to step up with Adams. Now, the big issue that they have is they still don't have a dependable second receiving option after Davante Adams. You know, their second and third leading receivers are Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams, running back. So that's going to be a problem. And that's why I don't think they have enough for the 49ers who can beat you any way you want them to. They can beat you through the air. They can beat you on the ground. They can beat you on defense with the number one pass defense in the NFL. And while that run defense is only ranked, I think it's somewhere between like 18 and 23. I forget where they finished. That's always misleading.
When that's you're number deceptive,
one,
right.
When you're number one in one category, you're going to give up more in the other category.
Right.
And at the end of the day, Mike, what this comes down to me, it's not about where the Packers are and how good they are. I don't think that there's a team in the NFC that can handle that 49er defensive front. They've got those five first-round draft choices that come at you in waves, and people forgot that D Ford hadn't been around for a few weeks until last week, you know, and Bosa is clearly the real deal. And after being disappointments early in their career, Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner easily could have both been all pros.
Right.
They are unbelievable up front, and I don't think the Packers are going to be able to handle, I don't think they're going to be able to run on them. And I don't think they're going to be able to handle that pass rush.
If it comes down to Garoppolo, do you share the – it seems to be a lot of people think he's the weak link. If it comes down to Jimmy Garoppolo having to win the game, can he do it? Where's your level of faith in him?
He did it in New Orleans. In New Orleans. And New Orleans is a better team than the Packers.
They scored 46,
they scored 48.
I think.
They won that game 48-46, and he was the difference. They ran the ball really well in that one, too. I think – you know, Garoppolo now has one playoff game under his belt. I don't know if people think he's the weak link so much as it's the inexperience in the playoffs and that he's not yet in the class. You don't talk about him the way you talk about Mahomes or Watson or certainly not Rodgers. But he's had a pretty good year. There have been a number of times where they needed to throw the ball to either come from behind or win, and he did get it done. He does throw the bad interception every once in a while. What was unusual about Saturday is that when he threw the pick early, they took the air out of the ball, and they haven't done that in the past, but they were able to do that against the Vikings. Remember, they ran 12 straight running plays.
Yes.
And they were just pounding him on the ground.
Enjoyed that.
And the Vikings' run defense is much better than the Packers, and so that's – listen, the Packers were out there just 7 weeks ago. They got embarrassed 38-7. These teams, the 49ers are better now. They're healthier. Packers are pretty much the same team. They may be more competitive this time, but I'm hard-pressed to find how they win the game.
It was the most impotent statistical game in Aaron Rodgers' career. Yeah. He threw for 81 yards against them, and he played. I mean, they didn't yank him. He played, and he threw for 81 yards. Does that mean anything come Sunday?
No, Aaron Rodgers.
Fairly recent, though. I mean, if it's September, I think it's irrelevant. But
if it was another quarterback, I'd say maybe. But Rodgers, Brady,
good
Breeze.
Answer.
No. I mean, you know, he's out there for this Sunday, and I think it was interesting talking to him after the game Sunday. He's got an edge about him right now, and it's a different kind of Rodgers edge than we're used to. I think he's very happy with where this team is at, but underneath, behind the scenes, I think it's really eating at him. that people are saying it's not Aaron Rodgers' offense anymore. And I think he's going to try and come out and make some plays on Sunday.
Wally is in Elgin next up on the Score, taking football calls. Whatever you want to talk about, football, Bears, NFL, Hub Arkish is right here for you. Hi, Wally.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I really loved Hub's point about pro readiness. It just bothers me when people go for long shots based on athleticism. So that kind of brings me to my next question is, what would be, I know Ryan Pace sure likes to trade up, what would be the max that they can offer Cincinnati, and what would be the minimum that would have Cincinnati even entertained by the idea? I'm thinking draft picks. How many draft picks this year and maybe next year would it take for Cincinnati to maybe give up that number one spot? The way I look at it, Ryan Pace is in the doghouse already. Might as well throw all the chips in while you can. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, be pot committed, as they say in poker. I'm learning the poker language. I should. I know a lot of poker movies. What would it take to – he's in love with Joe Burrow, yeah. I think. That's what our caller's – Wally's all about. He wants Joe Burrow.
With good cause. But it's just not feasible this year. You know, you can – what there's no limit. They could give him five number one picks for the next 5 years if they want.
Well, what would it take? Whether it's the Bears or someone else, what would Cincinnati –
for someone else, it's different because the problem the Bears have right now is that with 43 and 50, you can get into the back of the first round. But the Bengals can't go from number one overall to 43 and 50, no matter what they get next year and the year after. But you take another top 10, top 15 team who can start with this year's number one. You know, you take the Raiders with multiple number ones, with the Bears number one and theirs, although, you know, they're middle of the first round, and then throw in another year or two, because I'm surprised. I thought Derek Carr had a pretty good year, but the people I'm talking to are telling me that John Gruden is not sold on Carr. And you know, I could see him and Mike Mayock doing something like that. I'm trying to think. There's other teams besides Oakland that have multiple number ones, and it's escaping me who they are. But to do it this
year. I just saw it yesterday, too, and I'm not pulling it.
Well, I think, let's see, the Rams get – Jacksonville has multiple number ones because the Rams gave their number one for Jalen Ramsey.
You know, I think that's
it. Now, Jacksonville could be very interesting. And I don't think Gardner Minshew may be fun, but is there a guarantee with that? You know, so you
I don't
know,
even think he was that fun.
Yeah, you know, the mustache was fun, but
we needed a mustache. Is that what it is?
Yeah, the answer to your question, and there's another reason not to do it. There are some who will still tell you that Trevor Lawrence is the better prospect, in spite of what happened last night. We're talking about body of work now.
He didn't hurt himself last night,
did he?
He got beat by a great defense in a national title game.
Yeah, he didn't. He never really, after that first touchdown run, though, whatever. The bottom line is that there are many who think that he is the golden child, the best prospect in 20, 30 years. That's next year. Next year's class is also going to be very good, and next year the Bears at least have all their number ones back to work with if they needed to move again. And so to bankrupt yourself for the foreseeable future when you still haven't written off the last time you bankrupted yourself on Mitch, they're just not going to do it.
Yeah, Dolphins with the multiple first.
Right.
Dolphins.
They traded Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Yep.
Dolphins, Jaguars. So the Dolphins with five wins. Now, the Dolphins may need to move up. The Dolphins are probably the team to keep an eye on. Cincinnati's got to take it. Burrow's from Ohio. How does Cincinnati not take him?
Unless there's something about him they don't like. I don't know what that would be.
Yeah, I mean, Duke told
the absence of a ton of experience. Yeah. He blitzed through his final year like he'd been.
Nobody's ever had a year like
that. Yeah, I mean.
It's a concern.
That's not 13 games at North Carolina and winning a Pinstripes Bowl or whatever the hell it is Trubisky did.
Well, and Duke Tobin, I told you his father's whole philosophy that Duke was raised on. A guy who's been very good and won at a big program. Well, that's Joe Burrow. So I don't see them that. And plus, you also got to remember that there's a new CBA coming after this year. Burrow is not a cap breaker. It's a rookie salary pool. You know what he's going to cost you.
Yeah.
Depending on what happens with the CBA after this year, they may lose that rookie pool. You don't know. And so this is a great year to do it with a number one quarterback.
Those of you holding, hang tight. There's one line open if you want it. Jump in. 312-644-6767. NFL Bears with Hub Arkush and me, Mac, Score Sports Radio.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
670.
Well, Joe, you know, coming into this season, your dad retired to watch every single game, and he's been in the stadium celebrating with you. What does it mean to be able to win this national championship in front of him?
You know, my dad won a Grey Cup in Canada, but there was kind of this Burrow curse. My brother lost a national championship. My dad lost a couple of Grey Cups. I lost a state championship. Both my brothers lost state championships. You know, this is kind of our first one, so this is super special.
Well, I see you haven't put the ball down, and after you threw your fifth touchdown pass, which set a record for national championship, you pointed to the ring finger. Do you know what size ring you wear?
10.5. We already got fitted for them.
All right, well, it'll be coming soon. Congratulations, Joe.
All the jewelry and all the stuff.
Pirates Radio, not too happy, or television, not too happy. Joe Burrow last night after the ball game, already fitted for his ringside. That's ring size. That's confidence. That's knowing you're going to get it done.
Well, and if you heard the interview, what he added on right after is we got measured already. And I think that kind of set a few people in the wrong direction. Uh-huh. But I believe that they get like a conference title ring besides the national championship.
Okay.
So that's probably why they got measured.
Okay,
I think
yeah.
They get an SEC ring, and I think they get a national championship.
Sounds like a college coach motivational tactic, doesn't it?
Sure.
Let's go size us for our rings because we're going to win this game on Monday night.
You know what? Maybe a few, but I also could see a bunch going in the absolute opposite direction of that. We have accomplished nothing.
That's true.
You've won nothing. Hellfire and brimstone.
Was it Digger Phelps that used to practice cutting down the nets? Oh, you're going to have an upset. Let's go practice cutting down the nets.
I've not heard that. But that's, what time was that interview with Joe Burrow, Hub? Around midnight last night, 12:30?
I know
the game was cumbersome for you. Too many commercials, too long of a halftime show.
I kept going back. Unfortunately, I didn't realize that Platoon was on. And so I kept going back for the something else. And I was waiting. I wanted to see the trophy presentation. What I wanted to see... The offensive coordinator, is it Bill Ensinger? Bill Ensinger?
Shep would know. Is that right, Shep?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Joe Brady's his right-hand man.
But I was not familiar. I mean, I knew about the plane crash. I didn't realize his daughter had been on it.
Daughter-in-law,
his son's wife. And they made reference. They kept showing him and his son hugging and talking about what a difficult few days it's been. And I couldn't figure out what they were talking about. And so I was kind of waiting for that. And that's why I just happened to hear Burrow at that point. You know, and that was still a good 15 minutes before they did the trophy presentation.
It was a great theater last night. Not as good as the NFL over the week. It was a very good college game. Do we see what it did for viewership? Did we set any records last night? I projected records for a cable broadcast. I don't know if we've got numbers.
I haven't seen an official number.
That.
I'll do some digging real fast.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to get back to the phones. Angela has been waiting very patiently on the south side as we talk football with Hub Arkish. Hello, Angela.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Okay, I need some help.
this Bill Lazor choice for offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Am I missing something? The coordinator of a losing team, we're bringing him on. Is this another foolhardy folly that I need some help to understand.
Okay. You know, you called the right guy. Hub Arkush is here with the complete file on Bears' new offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor, who's been at Cincinnati. He's bounced around the league. He's bounced around colleges for a long time. I guess the short end of the story is when you're going to be the offensive coordinator for Matt Nagy, you're not going to get cream of the crop, is what you intimated earlier, because you're not really the coordinator.
Well, there's two different issues here, Angela. One is that Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur coached on a lot of losing football teams before they got their head coaching job. So there's nothing unusual about that. Number two is that we don't know from the outside looking in what Matt Nagy's relationship is with his offensive coordinator, other than they're not going to get to call plays. Now, that in itself isn't as unusual as Bears fans want to keep thinking that it is. There's a number of teams around the league where the head coach calls the plays, whether he be an offensive or a defensive guy. I mean, Vic Fangio is still calling the defenses in Denver. So that in itself isn't a problem. But how much responsibility and autonomy do these coordinators have beyond that? That's the part we just don't know. I got the sense at times during the last 2 years that Dave Ragone may have had as much to do with the offense as Mark Helfrich, and he was the quarterback coach. And so I don't know what the job description given to Bill Lazor was. It seems, let me put it a different way. I've confirmed with a couple folks that there was an outreach to Pat Shermer. There was some horrible reporting. It wasn't reporting. It was stupidity. It was writing that the reason that Shermer chose Denver over Chicago is because he didn't want any part of Mitch Trubisky. That was ludicrous. The reason he chose Denver over Chicago is exactly what we're talking about. He was going to come here and be an unknown assistant. In Denver, he has complete reign of the offense, much like Vic Fangio had with the defense in Chicago. That's what that decision was about. It had nothing to do with Drew Lock and Mitch Trubisky. But that said, you get back to Lazor again, we don't know what he's being hired for.
Right.
And that's what makes this so tricky. He actually, Ryan Tannehill had his best year as a pro prior to this year under Bill Lazor in 2014 in Miami. He was a quarterback's coach for 2 years under Joe Gibbs and 2 years under Mike Holmgren. That's some pretty good, you know, resume pieces. So don't know what to make of it. The fact that him and Juan Castillo were out of the league last year is meaningless. Lazor in particular is 47 years old. These guys, they miss years every once in a while depending on how the coaching cycles go. But all that said, I'm not going to tell you it's a good hire because we just don't know. You know, it's not automatically a bad hire because he coached in Miami and Cincinnati, but I can't tell you it's a good hire without knowing what his responsibilities are going to be and what the relationship's going to be.
Will he ever call a play for the Bears, or is that Matt Nagy's job to keep?
I'll tell you what we do know is he was calling the plays in 2014 in Miami when Joe Philbin, a former offensive coordinator, was the head coach. And while they did have a decent year, he did have a 1,000-yard rusher. Lamar Miller rushed for 1,100 yards, 1,099, averaged 5.1 a carry. But they did throw the ball 67% of the time that year, which is a little bit on the high end of the pass-run ratio. And so that tells you that there is that connection between him and Nagy and the way they view offensive football in the NFL today.
One small piece of Bears news today, maybe it affects you, maybe it doesn't. The Bears have announced they've terminated their relationship, at least from a training camp standpoint, with Olivet Nazarene University, even though there were 3 years remaining on the contract to have camp at Olivet Nazarene. The Bears are pulling up stakes effective immediately. They will train in Lake Forest this summer, and accessibility is going to be a fraction of what it was for Bears fans who enjoy making that trip, and it certainly affects commerce in Kankakee County. I'm sure there are Bears flags flying at half staff this Tuesday afternoon.
You know, it's a decision that they have to make for what they believe is in the best interest of the football team and the organization. And again, it's all based on what they think is going to give them the best chance to be good and to win. But boy, you know, public relations wise, this is there's gonna be a lot of unhappy Bears fans.
Yeah.
There's no positive way to spin this. You're taking money out of the Tri-City economy. You're denying access to your fans. And it was a particular demographic or segment of your fan base who were less likely. I'm not saying there was no season ticket holders that went to Bourbonnais or no people with tickets, but for the most part, we've had a bunch of texters confirm it, because I mentioned this earlier. A lot of the folks went to training camp because it was their only chance to see the team.
Yeah, and some texters immediately jumped on board with that thought you expressed, saying, right on, Hub, that's exactly why I'm pissed today.
Well, and so while the Bears have said there will be some public access, and I'm sure they will, they're not stupid, they know what's happening here, they just don't have the capacity to welcome the kind of crowds that they had in Platteville and Bourbonnais, and it is going to be a greatly diminished access for fans, and I think that's probably kind of unfortunate.
Mark in Ashburn next up on the Score Sports Radio 670. Parkins back tomorrow. Hub Arkish nice enough to babysit me today until 6 o'clock. What's up, Mark?
Mr. Arkish, how are you, sir? Mr. McNeil, glad to talk to you guys.
Very good, thank you.
I have all the respect in the world for your football acumen, Hub, and I'm not just saying that tongue in cheek. You know more than I'll ever know. But I'm going to take great umbrage with your lack of respect for Bear fans when you expect us to accept your acceptance of Bear mediocrity over the decades. I'm 54 years old. You named Jim Finks Hall of Famer. You named Bill Tobin, who had a modicum of success, and I put it that way because there's no championship. Jerry Angelo took a Bear team to a Super Bowl with his general managership with the worst quarterback in Super Bowl history in the form of Rex Grossman. Would you like to hear some names from us Bear fans who are extremely frustrated with this organization? I'll give you Jack Pardee. I'll give you Neil Armstrong. I'll give you Dick Durant. Okay? I'll give you Phil Emery and Mark, don't call me Lisa Madigan, Trestman, Shane Matthews, Steve Walsh, Craig Krenzel, Chad Hutchinson. I can go on and on and on. The vitriol that Bear fans have towards this organization is justified, and I will not accept the mediocrity that this organization has put forth and say, it's okay, we just have to wait. We have to work on the formula. Ryan Pace knows what he's doing. He's a boob. He doesn't know what he's doing. Mitch Trubisky? Come on, man. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mark.
Quit yelling.
I'm so glad we decided to do this in the 4 o'clock hour. This, I think what this stems from your comments early in the show, you hate Twitter. Mm-hmm. And the reason being, it's that Bears fans are raining negativity just 1 year after the 12-4 season. Mm-hmm. Is that the genesis of this call, Shep? Did he say?
Well, no. Yes, until it's not just raining negativity 1 year after the 12-4 season. It's how much they hate the team. I don't know how you can be a fan and hate the team as much as these folks do. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I like to liken it to a restaurant. If the Bears were a restaurant, many of the last 40 years, I wouldn't choose to eat there.
I'd stop going.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's that simple. You know, if you're a Bears fan, and yeah, I'm not asking you to accept anything. I'm just making the point, you know, that with everything that you just said, and I'm glad you were able to get it off your chest, it still doesn't make Bill Lazor a bad coach before he even gets to Chicago. I mean, you know, until somebody has spoken to the man, until we have some idea what he wants to do, and I'm not saying he's a good coach, but I just say it doesn't, because everything that's gone wrong in the past doesn't make everything in the future bad.
Bill Lazor will have no effect on the Bears being good or being bad. Whether their arrow goes up or down will have nothing to do with him next year, I suspect.
I don't know. I don't know how good or bad a coach he is, but I can tell you this. If they don't get better at tight end, if they don't get better at left tackle, if they don't find a backup running back, if they don't find a second right now they've only got one starting inside linebacker, they've got one starting safety. There's a ton to do here, you know, and so I think that, you know, I get the frustration, but I would have thought that a 12-4 season and a Coach of the Year and Executive of the Year award would have bought these guys at least more than 6 months, you know, to show what they can do.
Well, I think of the way it went down this year, people got frustrated with Matt for not recognizing what his quarterback's deficiencies were and quickly acting on those and calling more of what works for him based on his skills versus what he envisions his dream quarterback to be. The coach didn't demonstrate much flexibility this year.
So
he didn't help himself at a lot of news conferences either.
I agree with you, Mac, but here's their argument. Their argument is that they don't necessarily agree that Trubisky isn't what they want him to be, and the only way to get him there is to continue to develop him. And their argument is that just because they were 12-4 year one didn't mean that it wasn't still a 2 or 3 year process. And this is where we had Chico on Bears pregame. He was in our Where Are They Now segment. I can't remember if it was the last week or the second last week of the season. And this is Ron Rivera, two-time NFL coach of the year, and I hope Bears fans don't hate him. trying to tell Olin and Patrick and myself that the only reason that he was able to be successful in Carolina is because of the patience they had with him in his first year at 3-13 and his second year at 7-9. And so I guess what I'm getting at is had the Bears, you know, they came off a 3-year stretch with John Fox where they were 14-34. So right. Had they gone 6-10 or 7-9 instead of 12-4 and then gone 8-8, I don't think people would be as upset as they are right now.
They have a losing record in the last decade. In Ted Phillips's tenure, they're a sub-500 team. If you want to take it even back, way, way back to when Michael McCaskey was removed from power because of the Dave McGinnis fiasco in 99.
Yeah, well, listen.
The Lions have won only 4 fewer games than the Bears in the last decade.
Nobody is disputing Bears history. It is what it is, you know. And I understand the frustration with all that's gone wrong, but it's that all people want to do is waste their time and their data rates and their phone, you know, costs and everything else. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's just me. Maybe other people do Twitter on their computer. I do most of it from my phone. I don't know.
Don't be so resigned. Well, I'm loving the
but think about the joy and excitement this summer, this past summer.
Yeah.
And I actually maintain that one of the biggest problems with the team this season is I think they lost their offseason to the whole 100th season celebration thing. I think that they lost focus. I don't think that they worked as hard as they could have. I think they got overconfident. And I think that is as much to blame as bad coaching, to be honest with you.
I loved a lot of the text reaction. We don't take a lot of calls on the McNeil and Parkin show. A lot of good reaction to a caller. Most people with an enthusiastic thumbs up. We need more of that idiot is my favorite text of the bunch. And another guy, Mike, says, kind of like Steve Walsh. Yeah, Steve Walsh won a playoff game, right? Yeah. Didn't Steve Walsh beat the Vikings on New Year's Day of 95? I'm pretty sure he won a playoff game.
And what happened the next week?
Bad. In San Francisco, very, very bad. Would I forever, whatever, indelibly etched in my brain forever, Bears lost to the 49ers is Floyd, William Floyd, the running back and the blocking back out of Florida State, body slamming Alonzo Spellman in the end zone.
It's the social consciousness aspect of this that intrigues me so much. The Cubs won 108 years, and nobody ever hated the Cubs the way Bears fans hate the Bears. I mean, that's just the part. Guys, I'm not saying anybody's right or wrong. I'm just trying to get my arms around it and understand. And the vitriol, I think, is unnecessary. It's a game.
Well,
it's not life.
That's very much true on that. I'm with you on that. There is an observation I have of Bears fans and how they are a little bit different from other fandoms, sweeping with a broad brush. I'll share that with you in just a little bit. We'll take a few more phone calls as well. Hub is with me until 6. I'm Dan McNeil. You've got the Score Sports Radio 670.
Snap to Grossman. Back to throw. Tight pocket. Down the seam, over the shoulder. Caught. Rashid Davis inside Seattle's 40-yard line. How he hung onto it, I don't know. Slight angle to the right. Snap is down. Kick by Robbie Gould. End over end to the uprights. Yeah! And it's good!
Robbie Gould!
Robbie Gould is good again! Yeah! And the Bears have won the NFC Divisional Playoff game! New Orleans, come to Chicago, baby. We'll be waiting for you.
Yes, indeedy do. 12 years ago today, 13 years ago today, the Bears knocked off the Seattle Seahawks at Soldier Field. Bring on the Saints and Drew Brees, and they would pound them as well. 13 years ago today, Hub. How about that?
And I was actually on the sidelines for that one. They tried to lose that game to Seattle.
Yes, they did. The behind Pete Carroll in the Super Bowl, they lost to the Patriots. I think the dumbest playoff thing I've ever seen a head coach do. When Lovie Smith called a timeout, is that what you're referring to? Right around midfield? Give the Seahawks a chance to get a PI and trot Josh Brown, their pretty good place kicker out there.
They got off to a fairly decent lead that game. I forget, Cutler hit, it might have been Musa Muhammad. It wasn't Musa Muhammad. It was the other, was it Bernard Berrien? I forget who it was.
Oh, so many outstanding possibilities.
Yeah, I think they let the Seahawks come back and they needed the late field goal. But hey, they certainly didn't. They gave New Orleans no chance. They blew them out pretty good in that NFC title game. Yeah,
that's exactly right. This hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves that comes with a $5,000 signing bonus? Go to ChicagoWolves.com/sprint to learn how to win the Sprint Power Play payday. Dave in Woodridge has been waiting very, very patiently. Dave, thanks for hanging in. You're on the Score with Mac and Hub Arkish.
Hey, no problem, guys. Can I answer Huff's Bear fan angst point before making my other point? I really want to
Dave,
answer
you, I think we got the answer a couple minutes ago, but you're more than welcome to add to it. So go ahead. Yeah.
I'll just make it real quick. For me, the promise of a great organization and a great team and a great franchise, not a franchise, a great team, a great management team, was just completely fell flat this year. It wasn't like they missed one game and didn't make the playoffs. They were never really, maybe one or two games, they just did not look like anything like last year, and it looked like they were exposed and had absolutely no answer for the adjustments that needed to be made. That's why I was frustrated. I never felt they were going to contend after the Oakland game. Never.
Well, Dave, I get it. Anyway, a quick question for you, though. You felt that they had the talent to make the adjustments on offense?
I felt they had the talent because they did do it the previous year, but it looked like Mackey was exposed, and he never was able to readjust after the league adjusted to him. Now you show the Dallas game. They looked awesome against Dallas. That was amazing. Where was that the rest of the year? Where was that opening night against Green Bay? They run that game plan against Green Bay. They win that game easily. The running, the I formation, the variety of the offense. It looked great. I don't know where it was the rest of the season, though, Bob. I saw one good game of offense. That was the Dallas game.
Yeah, you can't really translate from game to game. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just trying to get my arms around it. I just maybe you're not one of those who, literally, it sounds like hate, and that's the part I don't get. I don't get how you can be a fan and dislike the team so much at the same time. Those are kind of the folks I was talking to.
Okay, so my question for you guys, well, more a little more for you, Hub. About 6 weeks or so ago, the NFL, I think, announced that they were going to do a top-down review of officiating in the offseason. Maybe the NFL announced, maybe it came on ESPN. I'm not sure where it came from. But my biggest issue with the NFL last year and this year is the misuse of instant replay. It looks like a lot of these calls still aren't being made right when they go to instant replay, whether it's not been called that way all year. The letter of the law is this, so we're not going to overturn the call. I just look like I'm seeing things that aren't being overturned. And I'm wondering if instant replay is sort of like quicksand for the NFL, if they're really getting into a lot of problems with all these reviews. Do you think that the NFL is going to either scale it back or find some other way of using instant replay? Because it looks like it's a big can of snakes, to use your terminology, Hub. I don't see how the NFL is going to fix this.
He waited a long time to get in Hub's malaprop. Yeah,
I think my snakes were in a bag. But,
snakes were
indeed. You just opened up a bag of snakes that you can't close.
Right, you're right.
Can of worms, bag of snakes. What's the difference?
Yeah, that's right.
I think you got two different categories of answer there. The new rule this year, which was making pass interference replayable, has been a disaster. And you've seen, two overturn?
Offensive pass interference.
They have no intentions of overturning it. And the reason is because you won't find, five back judges who call the penalty the same way. It's a very subjective call. Now, as far as replay in general, there is a much higher percentage of calls of plays being, overturned. Is it enough? I think the key there is clear and uncontrovertible evidence. It's not just because it looks that way to you. You have to be able to prove it. All of that said, to me, this is one of the easiest big problems to solve that I've ever seen. Bill Belichick has been saying it for 10 years at least now. You leave the challenge rules with the coaches exactly the way they are, which is an interesting part of the strategy of the game, but you let them replay anything they want. Don't give them categories.
I've heard you preach this, and I agree with you. You still get the same number of challenges per game, so it doesn't elongate the game. You get the same number of them.
But why only certain things you can look at? It doesn't make sense. There's all kinds of ways to change the outcome of a game.
There's a face mask missed every game.
Yeah.
There were several missed on Sunday, both sides.
And if you did that, and you know what? If you get to an egregiously bad call, but the coach already used up his challenges, then it's a coaching mistake. It's not just an official's mistake. And I think it would make a lot of the concern and a lot of the angst over replay go away.
This hour of the show is brought to you by CarX. Save up to $200 on four tires installed at CarX. Last hour, we're going to share with you some of the thoughts of MLB Network's Dan Plesac. Nothing new from Major League Baseball today. We had him on very, very early in the show. Hub and I spent almost the entire first hour talking about baseball's cheating scandal. Sack had some spirited conversation about that. We'll get back to LSU and real fast. I'll try to get this in 30 seconds. Something I think makes Bears fans different from other fan bases in town. When the teams who aren't the Bears acquire a big name player via free agency or trade, he is on a very short leash. If he fails early, whether you're Adam Dunn or Yu Darvish, John Lester, somebody the Bulls pick up, you fail early, they will barbecue you. Bears fans don't want to believe it. Bears fans want to give you the benefit of the doubt for a longer period of time, whether you're Jay Cutler or whether you're Khalil Mack. They refuse to open their minds up to the idea that the Messiah has not arrived. That's my opinion, for what it's worth. Anybody? You're an idiot, Mac. Stop it with that nonsense. Is that an idiot?
Not for that reason.
Okay. All right. We will. Am I an idiot for that thought?
Not for other things, though. I mean, the stuff that makes me crazy. Here's another texter. As I'm watching the Saturday game, I looked at 2017 draft. What was Ryan Pace doing besides the quarterback misses? The Bears could have drafted Dalvin Cook in the second round or Alvin Kamara in the third, George Kittle in the fifth, and still had Eddie Jackson, Tariq Cohen. But what about the other 31 teams who all passed these guys once, twice, four times? These guys don't bat 1,000, okay?
Right.
I am not giving him a pass on Trubisky if this turns out to be a failure because it was predictable. But you can't fault these guys for every great player they don't get.
You could do that for every year of the draft. You can find guys who were drafted way lower than if you could do it all over again, they would be drafted. Hub is in for Danny. Danny's back tomorrow. I'm Danny. This is The Score, Sports Radio 670.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.